sharp suit reddened and slammed his fist against the table, snatching the papers and choking them in his hand as he waved them around, spitting as he spoke. The papers crumpled. Vicious's cool didn't. No. He remained calm and unruffled as he leaned forward, saying something I couldn't decipher. And the more the blonde man got excited and heated, the more Vicious looked uninterested and amused. At some point, Sharp Suit threw his hands in the air and said something animated, his face as dark as a pickled beet. That's when Vicious's face brightened, and he propped one elbow on the table as he dragged his finger along what must have been a specific spot in the verbiage on the first page of the document. His lips were thin when he said something to the man in front of him, but Sharp Suit looked about ready to faint. My heart pounded too fast and my mouth dried. Jesus Christ. He was threatening him, and to no surprise to me, he wasn't being shy about it. Millie, take five! Dee slapped my ass from behind just then. I jumped, surprised. She was back from her cigarette break, and it was my turn. I didn't smoke, but I usually used the time to talk to Rosie on my cell. I wouldn't be doing that tonight, but I was glad Dee had apparently put my tardiness behind her. Thanks, I said, making a beeline to the toilets. I needed to wash my face and remind myself that the day was almost over. I slipped past the sinks and disappeared inside one of the individual stalls where I leaned against the door and took long, steady breaths. I didn't even know what would make me feel better. Getting my PA job back? No, I'd never liked it much. The accountant I worked for at the advertising agency was a walking, talking sexual harassment suit just waiting to happen. Having Vicious recognize me? It would only make me more flustered and embarrassed. Having him leave? I was too intrigued by him to want him gone. I left the bathroom and was just about to splash some water on my face at the sink when the door opened. And he walked in. He walked in. I wasn't scared. Even after everything that had happened, I knew he wouldn't hurt me. Not physically, anyway. But I was intimidated, and I hated that I looked like a Hooters reject, while he had an aura about him. When he walked into the room, no matter how dingy and small, you could feel the wealth, the status, the power. His eyes landed on the cherry blossom mural behind me before they leveled on my face, and my mind raced. His gaze told me he knew exactly who I was, and that I was the one who'd painted the mural behind me. He remembered me. What he did to me. He remembered everything. His eyes met mine, and my stomach knotted. My heart fluttered in my chest, and an urgent need to fill the awkward silence slammed into me. Have you come here for forgiveness? The words left my mouth before I had the chance to swallow them. Vicious chuckled darkly, like the concept in itself was preposterous. He hadn't made a single move, yet I felt his touch everywhere. You're a mess, he said matter-of-factly, eyeing my hair. My lavender locks were all over my face, and a nasty bruise had bloomed on my forehead. Nice to see you too. I pressed my back against the wall, my hands against the cold tiles below the mural, seeking relief from the fire he'd lit in me the moment he walked in. I see you successfully graduated from a bully to a tyrant in the span of a decade. He laughed, a deep laugh that vibrated against my bones. I closed my eyes, then opened them, drinking him in. A year of him being hateful toward me had trained me well. I stopped caring a long time ago that the joke was on me. His smile disappeared, replaced with a frown.
What are you doing here, help?
He took a step forward, but stilled when I held my hand up, stopping him. I wasn't sure why I did it. Maybe because it hurt so much that he was seeing me like this, helpless, half naked, poor and lost and small in this big city that chewed you up and spit out the remains once your hopes and dreams died. Filling the small, meaningless shoes he'd created for me all those years ago. Becoming the help. I work here, I said finally. Wasn't it obvious? He moved my way again, his posture casual and relaxed. This time I straightened. I tilted my chin up. A waft of his scent,
Spicy, earthy, clean, and masculine filled my nose. I inhaled and shivered. He'd always had this impact on me, and I always loathed myself for it.
Last I heard, you were working on a fine arts degree.
He arched a thick, devilish eyebrow as if to ask what went wrong. Everything, I thought bitterly. Everything went wrong.
Not that it's any of your business, but I did get a degree.
I pushed off from the wall and moved past him to wash my hands. He followed me with his eyes.
A thing called life butted into my plans, and I didn't have the luxury of working my way up on an art intern salary, so I work as a PA. That's what I did until about 3 hours ago when I was let go. I thought I was having a bad enough day when I walked in here, but my eyes swiped his body. Clearly, the universe decided to make it an all-out disaster. I didn't know why I was telling him all this. I didn't know why I was speaking to him at all. I should have yelled or stormed out of the bathroom after what he'd done to me years ago. Called our bouncer and kicked him out of McCoy's. But as much as I didn't like to admit it, I didn't hate him as much as I probably should have. A tiny, sad part of me knew he wasn't to blame for my current state. My choices were mine. I'd made my bed. Now I had to lie in it, even if it was full of fleas. He tucked one hand in his pocket, using his free one to tousle his unruly hair, even more perfect now that he was all man. I looked away, wondering how he'd spent the last decade, what he did for a living, whether he had a girlfriend or a wife or maybe even some kids. I'd always made it a point not to ask or listen, but now that he was in front of me, curiosity poked me, begging my mouth to ask these questions. But I didn't. Have a nice life, Vicious. I turned off the faucet, sashaying to the door. He grabbed my elbow and jerked me in his direction. A jolt of panic and excitement ripped through me. There was no point in shaking him away. He was twice my size.
Do you need help? Help?
He whispered in my face. I hated him for calling me that. And I hated me for responding to his gruff tone the way I did, even after all this time. Goosebumps prickled my skin, and a hot wave crashed inside my chest. I was breathing heavily, but so was he. Whatever it is I need, I said, my voice a hiss, I don't want it from you. He pinned me with a wolfish grin.
That's for me to decide,
he said, releasing my arm like it was dirty and nudging me to the door.
And I still haven't made up my mind.
I turned around and bolted out of the bathroom, leaving my high school crush turned nemesis alone in the bathroom. I contemplated asking Dee to serve their table for the remainder of the night. Knew she'd have probably said yes, seeing as they reeked of money. But my stupid pride made me want to see this evening through. It somehow felt important to show him and myself that I was indifferent to him, even though it was a lie. Around 3 rounds of drinks and an hour later, Sharp Suit stood up. He looked frustrated, annoyed, and defeated, feelings I knew all too well from my year in Todos Santos. The man extended his hand across the table, but Vicious didn't shake it or stand up. He just glared at the stack of papers between them, silently urging Sharp Suit to pick them up. The man did, and left in a hurry. I rushed to place their bill on the table and turned around before Vicious had a chance to talk to me again. He paid with a credit card and vanished from what used to be my lucky corner. When I picked up the signed receipt, my hands trembled. I was scared to see how much he'd tipped me. Pathetic, I knew. It shouldn't have mattered. But it did. On one hand, I didn't want to feel like a charity case, and on the other, I wanted... Heck, what did I want? Whatever it was, when I picked up the receipt, I knew it wasn't this. My eyes flared when I saw what he'd written at the bottom. For your tip, go to 125 East 52nd, 23rd floor. Black. A crazy laugh fizzed from my throat. I fisted the note into a tiny ball and dunk slammed it into the trash behind Kyle. Lousy tip? He looked up from his book, confused. He didn't leave one.
I motioned for him to pour me another shot. He grabbed the neck of the vodka bottle. Asshole. Oh, Kyle, I wanted to say, you have no idea.
Chapter 4. Vicious. Plot twists. Guess they kept shit interesting. I'd be lying if I claimed I'd forgotten about Amelia LeBlanc, but I hadn't expected to see her again. Sure, I knew she was in New York. New fucking York, the home of over 8 million people who weren't Amelia LeBlanc. I'd come to the city a week ago with the intention of doing one thing and one thing only, to make the jerk I'd met at McCoy's drop his fucking lawsuit against my company. He had. Did I enjoy intimidating him? Yes. Did it make me a bad person? Probably. Did I care? Not even one bit. Sergio had caved, but not because I metaphorically squeezed his balls so tight his future children screamed in agony. He'd done it because I pulled out a detailed draft of a counter-lawsuit, one I'd written myself the night before on my flight from L.A. to New York, and I'd ace this motherfucker. Lawyers had the potential to make the best criminals. That was a fact. The only thing that separated me from being an outlaw was opportunity. I had plenty of those within the law. But help wasn't far off. I was a bad person, a good lawyer, and to some extent, yes, still the same asshole who made her senior year miserable. Sergio was going to drop the lawsuit, let us keep the client we allegedly stole from his firm, and all was going to be well. I was a partner in a company specializing in high-risk investments and mergers. The four of us, Trent, Jamie, Dean, and I, had founded Fiscal Heights Holdings 3 years ago. They worked the money side while I was the company's lead attorney. Sure, I liked numbers. They were safe. They didn't fucking speak. What wasn't to like? But I liked arguing and pissing people off even more. And now I'd found help. She wasn't part of the plan, which made the surprise so much sweeter. She was the missing piece. Insurance, in case things went south back in Todos Santos. I came here for a merger deal, but I also needed someone to do my dirty work. Originally, I wanted my ex-psychiatrist to help me reach my goal. He knew the whole story and could testify against my stepmother. But fuck, dealing with help was going to be so much sweeter. It would probably shatter her innocent little soul. She didn't do revenge, was never cruel or selfish or any of the things that were the essence of my being. She was kind, polite, and agreeable. She smiled at strangers on the street. I would bet she still did, even in New York, and still had that faint southern drawl, welcoming and soft, just like her. I hoped she didn't have a boyfriend. Not for my sake, for his. Whether he existed or not didn't matter. I'd figuratively shoved him out of the picture the minute I set foot in McCoy's and looked up to find her peacock blue eyes staring right back at me. She was perfect. Perfect for my plans and perfect to pass the time with until they materialized. A ghost from my past who was going to help me haunt the demons of my present. She had the ability to help, and it was obvious she was in a financial pit. A black hole I could fish her out of, healthy and in one piece, except for her scruples. I was prepared to throw in a lot of resources to get her to agree to my plan. She was mine again the minute I saw her in her next-to-nothing outfit. She just didn't know it yet.
Amelia. My heart was my enemy. I'd known that since I was 17. That's why I couldn't stop thinking about him. Despite my recent unemployment, when thunder cracked and rumbled above my head. It had been 24 hours since I'd seen him, 3 hours since I'd thought about him, and 1 hour and 15 minutes since I'd debated for the 100th time whether or not to tell Rosie about it. At home, I wormed out of my soaked clothes, changed into dry ones, and ran back down to Duane Reade because I'd forgotten to pick up Rosie's meds. By the time I got back, I was soaked again. I opened the plastic bag and placed everything on the counter in our tiny studio apartment. Mucus thinners, vitamins, antibiotics. I unscrewed all the tops because Rosie was too weak to do it herself. My sister had cystic fibrosis. Some diseases are silent, but cystic fibrosis, it was also invisible. Little Rose didn't look sick. If anything, she was prettier than I was. We had the same eyes, blue with turquoise and green dots swirling around the edges. Our lips were soft and plump, and our hair the same shade of toffee. But while my face was round and heart-shaped, she had the sculpted cheekbones of a supermodel. To be a supermodel, though, Rosie would have to stride down the catwalk, and lately she couldn't even make it from our third-floor apartment down to our street. She wasn't always sick. Normally, she could function like almost any other person. But when she was sick, she was really sick. Fatigued, weak, and fragile. 3 weeks ago, she'd caught pneumonia. It was the second time in 6 months. We were lucky she'd taken the semester off college to try and make some money, because otherwise she would have flunked out. I bought you clear broth. I took out the carton from the bag when I heard her rustling in our bed. I set the soup next to her medicine and turned on the stovetop. How are you feeling, you little devil? Like a leech who sucks all your money? I'm so sorry, Millie. Her voice croaked with sleep. Friends was playing on our ancient television set. The canned laughter bounced between the scant furniture and thin walls, making our Sunnyside apartment a little more bearable. I wondered how many times Rosie could watch without losing her mind. She already knew all the episodes by heart. She rolled off the mattress and stood up, moving toward me. How'd the job hunting go? She rubbed my back in circles and started massaging my shoulders. I sighed, dropping my head back and squeezing my eyes shut. So good. I couldn't wait to jump into our double futon and watch TV under the blankets with my sister. Temp agencies are swamped, and no one is hiring for retail this close to Christmas. Those jobs are already gone. On the bright side, heroin chic is making a comeback, so at least we'll have that going for us. I blew out air. I guess what I'm trying to say is, money's gonna be extra tight this month. Everything went quiet, and all I heard were her labored breaths. She slapped a hand over her mouth and winced. Oh, fuck. Yep, Rosie was no Southern Belle. Can we survive December? I'm sure I'll get back on my feet soon. By January, we'll both be working. By January, we'll most likely be homeless, I muttered, placing a pot on the stovetop and stirring the broth. I wished I had something to add to it. Vegetables, chicken, anything to make her feel better. To make her feel home. We'll take everything you just bought back and get a refund. I don't need my meds. I feel so much better. My heart shattered in my chest. Because she did need them. She needed them bad. Her antibiotics prevented lung and sinus infections, and her inhalers opened her airway. Not only did my sister need her medications, she literally couldn't breathe without them. I threw away the receipt. I lied. Besides, I can always get them to raise the limit on my credit card. Another lie. No one in their right mind was going to give me more credit. I was already neck deep in debt. No, she interrupted again, spinning me around to face her. She gripped my hands. Hers were so cold I wanted to cry. I must have flinched because Rosie withdrew them quickly. It's bad circulation. I'm feeling really well, I swear. Listen to me, Millie. You've done enough for me. Made too many sacrifices along the way. Maybe it's time for me to go live with Mama and Daddy. Tears welled in her eyes, but she smiled. I shook my head and gathered her hands, rubbing them to warm her up. You've only got 2 years left on your degree here. You'd have to start over in California, even if you could find a program you could afford. Stay. There are zero opportunities for people like us in Todos Santos. Besides, our parents were still broke. So were we, but I was much better at shouldering the financial burden. I was young and still had fight in me. Our parents were old and worn out, two 60-something servants living in California, still in that stupid servant's apartment on the Spencer estate. It wasn't that bad for us most of the time. Rosie had worked too, until pneumonia knocked her on her butt. The wet, cold fall had made her sicker, and now winter had hit early and we were behind on the heat bill. But spring was going to come. Cherry trees were going to blossom. We were going to get better. I knew we would. Still, telling her about my encounter with Vicious was out of the question. She didn't need another reason to worry. I need a distraction. I rubbed my face, changing the subject. You can say that again. She tugged on her lower lip before turning and walking toward my easel in the corner of the small room. The easel held a half-finished painting I was working on, a sandstorm rising to an inky black sky. An art collector from Williamsburg named Sarah had ordered the painting. She used to work for Saatchi Art and was still tight with gallery owners all over the city. I wanted to impress her. I wanted to get my foot in the door. I also needed the money. Rosie knew painting soothed my soul. She took out the half-squeezed oil tubes, my brushes, and wooden palette, mimicking my usual routine when I prepared to paint. Then she swayed her hips to our old stereo, put on Teardrop by Massive Attack, and silently made me some coffee. I loved my baby sister so much in that moment. It reminded me the sacrifices I made for her were worth it. I painted as cold December rain furiously knocked on our window. Rosie plopped onto our mattress and talked to me like when we were in high school, exchanging notes about people we went to school with.
If you could fulfill one dream, what would it be? She mused, propping her pajama-clad legs against the cold wall.
Own a gallery of my own, I answered without even thinking, a stupid smile plastered all over my face.
You?
She picked at the fringe of the pillow she was hugging to her chest.
Get that damn degree and become a nurse, she said. Wait, scrap that. Jared Leto. My dream is to marry Jared Leto. I'd take a stab at Jared Leto. I'm not even talking about like a shallow wound. I'm talking a full-blown, deep-cut, ER-worthy stab. I mean, we'd be able to afford it. He's doing very well for himself.
I shook my head. She laughed, prompting me to do the same. Lord, Rosie. I knew it was important to box up these kinds of moments, keep them locked away in my heart, and call them up when things got hard. Because moments like these reminded me that my life was hard, but not bad. There was a difference between the two. A hard life equaled a life full of obstacles and challenging moments, but also full of people you loved and cared about. A bad life equaled an empty life, one that wasn't necessarily hard or challenging, but was devoid of the people you loved and cared about. By the time I was done painting, my fingers were numb and my lower back ached from standing in a weird position for hours. We shared mac and cheese and chicken broth and watched The One with the Lottery episode of Friends for the 6 millionth time. Rosie mouthed all the punchlines, her eyes never leaving the TV, and eventually fell asleep in my arms, snoring softly, her lungs wheezing for air. I was confused, tired, a little hungry, but above all, blessed. 4 days passed before I caved and bought a new phone. I didn't want to spend the money, but how else would potential employers contact me? It was nothing fancy, the kind of Nokia from before the smartphone era. But I could text and make calls and even play some old-school games like Snake. I'd been spending the week knocking on recruitment agencies' doors during the day and working shifts at McCoy's at night. Rochelle begged the other waitresses to give me their shifts so I could pay the rent, and even though I was embarrassed, I was mostly just grateful. Rosie took her medicine, but she was still getting worse, and worry gnawed at my gut. It was the apartment. We didn't have adequate heating in our tiny Sunnyside studio, and sometimes it was colder inside than it was out. I often found myself jogging in place, doing jumping jacks to warm up. Little Rose didn't have that option because she was always out of breath. I didn't know how to get out of the financial hole I'd been digging ever since I'd offered to have her come live with me. She'd wanted to study in New York, so I temporarily gave up on my internship at an art gallery and took the PA job to support us. That was 2 years ago. Stuck in a rut, I needed a miracle to survive until Rosie was back on her feet. My mind drifted to Vicious and the fact that he hadn't come back to McCoy's. Well, at least there are small miracles to be thankful for. I was mostly happy about it, but an occasional pang of sorrow would pierce my heart at the thought of him. I couldn't believe he hadn't left a tip. He really was a heartless bastard. It was another cold night, and I was getting back from a double shift at the bar. I held on to the banisters in our building as I fumbled my way up the dark staircase of the Italianate-style brownstone. The hallway upstairs was dark, too, because the landlord hadn't bothered to replace the dead light bulbs. I couldn't complain since I was late on the rent almost every month. My arms were stretched out in front of me as I felt my way down the hall. A shriek escaped my lungs when moonlight slanted through the tall window near my apartment door. A large shadow fell across me. My pepper spray was already out of my new thrift store courier bag when a light flashed from a smartphone the shadow was holding. Bluish light enveloped the angles of Vicious's face. He was leaning against my door, wearing a tailored navy sweater rolled to his elbows, black dress pants and stylish shoes, the leather still wrinkle-free. He looked like a Ralph Lauren ad, and I looked like the girl who cleaned up the set. The visual alone made me scowl at him before he even opened his mouth. "I'm surprised, help." The ever-constant nickname gave me yet another reason to scowl. Help. His eyes dropped the mace, but he didn't seem fazed by it.
"I thought you'd come for your tip."
"You did?" The tension in my body eased as some of the fear rolled off of me, but my heart continued pumping furiously for a whole different reason. "Well, here's a tip from me to you. When you single-handedly ruin someone's life, said someone is not too eager to contact you, especially for money." Vicious looked indifferent to my bitter tone. He pushed off from my door and strode closer, purposeful and confident, reminding me that he was much more comfortable in his skin than I was in mine. When he stopped, his chest brushed mine, sending shivers to the rest of my body. I moved aside, crossing my arms over my chest and quirking an eyebrow. "Do I want to know how you found me?"
"Your little friend Rochelle thinks I'm taking you out on a surprise date. Not the sharpest pencil in the box, but then you always had a soft spot for the simpletons of the world."
I looked away from his face, concentrating on the peeling, worn door leading to my shoebox apartment. "What are you here for, Vicious?"
"You said you're a PA,"
he replied on half a shrug. "And?"
"And I need one."
I tossed my head back and laughed, not a trace of humor in me. He really had some nerve. My laughter died quickly. "Leave." I fished my keys out of my purse and stabbed the key toward the lock. He reached for my waist, effortlessly spinning me around to face him. His touch caught me off guard. Suddenly, I felt lightheaded. I jolted away from his body and twisted back to the door, hysteria climbing up my throat. I dropped the keys and picked them up. I didn't like the way my body reacted to this man. It always had been, still was, completely out of sync with the way I felt about him.
"Name your price,"
he growled, way too close to my ear. "World peace? The cure for lung disease? For the white stripes to reunite?" I shot back. He didn't even blink.
$100K a year.
His voice crawled into my ear like sweet poison, and I froze.
"I know your sister is sick. Work for me, help, and you won't have to think about how to pay for Rosie's meds ever again."
How long a conversation did he have with Raish? And more importantly, why? That kind of pay would be amazing, especially for a PA. I could quit my night job at McCoy's, not to mention provide for my sister and myself. But my pride, my stupid pride, a monster that demanded to be fed only when Vicious was at the dinner table, snatched the imaginary microphone and did the talking for me.
"No,"
I gritted out.
"No?"
He cocked his head to the side like he didn't hear me right. And dang it, he looked good doing it.
Is this word new to you?
I squared my shoulders.
No amount of money is going to make the fact I hate your guts disappear.
150K might,
he said, unblinking. Does he need a hearing aid? His eyes were so dark blue they sparkled like rare sapphires. He thought it was a negotiation. He was wrong.
It's not about the money, Vicious.
I felt my teeth grinding together.
Do you want it in another language?
I can write it down for you, or even communicate it in the form of a dance. His mouth twisted into something that resembled a smirk, but it failed to last.
I forgot how fucking fun it is to piss you off. I'm throwing in an apartment within walking distance of the job, fully furnished and paid for throughout your employment.
I felt the blood rush between my ears. Vicious! Would it be too much to punch him?
And a nurse who will be on call for Rosie, 24 fucking hours a day. That's my final offer.
His jaw ticked once. We stood in front of each other like two warriors about to wield our swords, and a sob caught in my throat because, goddammit, I wanted to take the deal. What did that make me? Weak? Immoral? Or simply insane? More than likely, all three. This man had driven me out of California, out of my mind. Now he was hell-bent on hiring me, on elbowing his way back into my life. It didn't make sense. He wasn't a friend. He didn't want to help. His proposition was littered with red flags. I tried to slam my key into the lock again, but couldn't find the keyhole in the dark. Which reminded me I had an electricity bill to pay. Three of them, actually. Fun, fun, fun. What's the catch? I croaked as I turned to face him, rubbing my forehead, frustrated. He brushed his knuckles over his cheekbone, amusement dancing in his pupils.
Oh, help. Why must there always be a catch?
Because it's you.
I knew I sounded bitter. I didn't care.
It may entail some tasks that won't make it into your contract. Nothing too seedy, though.
I cocked an eyebrow. That didn't sound too reassuring. He quickly caught my drift.
Nothing sexual, either. You'll be happy to know I still see more ass than a proctologist. For free.
For some stupid reason, my heart leapt when I read between the lines. Vicious was single. No girlfriend if he was still enjoying meaningless flings. Vicious was too proud a man to be a cheater. He was an ass, but a loyal one nonetheless.
And why me?
The fuck does it matter?
It does to me, I bit out, a last-ditch effort to walk away from this deal. And also, because I'm a terrible PA. Terrible. I once sent the accountant I worked for to a meeting with another company's file, and I nearly booked his wife a flight to St. Petersburg, Russia, instead of St. Petersburg, Florida.
Thank the Lord for airport codes, I muttered.
You would have done her a huge favor. Florida is a fucking downer,
he quipped, adding,
and your stripper outfit may have made me feel a tad bit guilty.
Liar, I thought bitterly. Yet it was so fitting that he'd found me here. One eviction notice away from rock bottom, offering me the one thing I couldn't refuse, dangling the health and security of me and my family in my face once again. I don't want to work for you. I sounded like a broken record.
Lucky for me, you don't have much choice. When reality makes the decision for you, it's easier to accept your fate. Your tip.
He shoved one hand into his slacks pocket and took out a folded slip of paper.
Was waiting for you. Next time you're asked to do something, do it in a timely manner. Patience is not one of my virtues.
What is? I deadpanned. Still eyeing him suspiciously, I plucked the paper from between his long fingers and took a peek, my pulse drumming wildly. A check. $10,000. Sweet Jesus and his holy crew.
Consider it a month's signing advance.
He looked down at it, his brows furrowing as he examined it along with me. His shoulder brushed mine, and a warm surge lapped across my chest.
Since we agreed on 150K, the after-tax will be about right when you start working for me.
I don't remember agreeing to anything, I argued, but even I didn't believe myself at this point. I'd taken on so much debt and was living off one meal a day. Not a big one either. I was at war with myself, but deep down I knew that the money was going to win this time around. It wasn't about greed. It was about survival. I couldn't afford my pride, and my pride, unlike the money, wouldn't be able to feed me, to pay for Rosie's medication, and to make sure our electricity was still on next month. Vicious reached for my cheek and brushed a lock of hair from my eye. His body so close to mine, I could feel his heat. It threw me back to the night we kissed all those years ago. I didn't remember the moment fondly.
Do you trust me with your life?
His voice was black velvet, caressing me in places he had no business reaching. No, I answered truthfully, closing my eyes, wishing it was someone else who was making me feel what I was feeling. Hot. Wanting. Wanted. Anyone else but him.
Do you trust me with mine?
He asked. The man was smart. No, smart was putting it mildly. More like a genius. He was cunning and intelligent and always a step ahead of everyone else. He kept his ass covered. I knew that, even though we'd only lived close to each other during my senior year. In those months, I'd seen him walk out of so much trouble. From hacking into teachers' laptops and downloading exams, selling them to desperate students for a ludicrous price, to burning up a restaurant at the Todos Santos Marina. But we weren't kids anymore. We were grown-ups, and the consequences were heavier. I nodded yes.
Show up at work tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. sharp, help. It's the address I gave you at that bar. And don't make me regret my generosity.
I felt a breeze moving across me when he turned the corner and left the hallway, silent as a ghost. I heard the door to my building slamming shut downstairs, and that's when I opened my eyes. It was a good thing I remembered the address he'd scribbled for my so-called tip by heart. I'd somehow inked it into memory, just like everything else about him. My default mechanism with Vicious was to collect everything about him. And now, apparently, I had a new job working beside him. I unlocked the door and found Rosie asleep. I was relieved her meds had allowed her to sleep through the commotion we'd caused in the hallway. That was the moment I decided this was the right choice to make. This was just another stolen textbook moment. I had to bow down in submission, take this big bad wolf's heat, and then walk out of the situation with what I needed. But this time, I was going to be the one to leave on my own terms, not his. That was my promise to myself. I hoped to God I could keep it.
Chapter 5 Vicious. I'll fucking ruin her. I rolled a pen between my fingers, Help's pen, the one I'd snagged from her at McCoy's. She hadn't noticed the pen was missing. She was too flustered to realize what was happening, and that was exactly how I liked her. The pen was chewed on at the top, and it was so fucking typical of Amelia. She used to leave chewed pencils on her desk every single day in calculus class. I may have picked them up. I may have saved them. They may still be in a drawer somewhere in my old room. Shit happens when you're a horny teenage boy. I rolled my executive chair back, pushing from my desk and swiveling toward the floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking Manhattan. People said New York made them feel small, but I thought New York made me feel pretty fucking big. From my point of view, I sat on the 23rd floor of a skyscraper and I motherfucking owned the whole floor. 32 people worked here, soon to be 33 when Miss LeBlanc joined us, and they all answered to me, depended on me, smiled at me in the hallway, even though I was an ill-mannered bastard. I mean, how could New York make me feel small when I grabbed it by the balls and made a last-minute reservation at 14 Madison Park for tonight? Some folks were owned by New York, and some folks owned it. I was among the latter, and I didn't even live in the fucking city usually. You will not ruin your stepmom, Dean dismissed with a laugh. I was still facing the Manhattan view. He was on speaker. You've been watching too much Pinky and the Brain. Only you don't want to take over the world, you just want to shit on people's lives. She texted me last night that she's landing in New York this afternoon and expects me to clear my schedule for her. I fumed. Who does she think she is? Your stepmother? Dean's voice was light and amused. It was 4:15 a.m. on the West Coast, the ass crack between night and morning. Not that I gave a fuck. He wasn't used to the time difference yet. Lived in New York for the last 10 years of his life, and he was chill by nature, the little fuckwit. And to be fair, you were supposed to be back in California by now. What's taking you so long? He asked. When the fuck are we switching back? I heard the woman who was in bed with him, in my Los Angeles bed, fucking gross, moaning in protest at his loud voice. I licked my lips and twisted Help's pen in my hand. I still needed to tell him that I'd hired her, but decided to wait till next week. He had no idea she was living in New York all these years, and I wanted to keep it that way. One disaster at a time. I had my stepmom to deal with today. Not anytime soon. Your staff's been slacking off. I'm picking up the work you've left here. Vicious, he grated out through what sounded like clenched teeth. Our 6-year-old enterprise, Fiscal Heights Holdings, was so successful we had 4 branches. New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and London. Normally Dean was in New York and I was in Los Angeles. Sergio and his stupid lawsuit had brought me here. I was the one who used my mouth for more than sweet talking and licking ass. If we needed someone to soften a client, we sent Trent. But if shit got nasty and the situation called for intimidation or legal ruthlessness, I was the one on call. Meanwhile, Dean was taking the opportunity to check on our Los Angeles branch. We did it from time to time, all 4 of us. Switched scenery, shook things up. As a token of our friendship, we stayed at each other's places. The 4 of us co-owned all of our residences. We were a family, and in the upper class, nothing said family like mingled estates and funds. Normally, I didn't mind, even though I knew Trent and Dean would dip their sausages in every single honeypot within a 20-mile radius of my condo. Those fuckers had probably bedded half of Los Angeles in my crib, but that's what I had them made for. And a PA who made sure the sheets they used were thrown out, or better yet, burned, before we switched back. This time, I especially didn't mind Dean staying at my condo. I wasn't prepared to drag my ass out of his apartment either. Our New York branch was a mess, and I did need a personal assistant to sort it out. Sadly for Help, she was going to get dumped right after I was done with her. I couldn't let her work for Dean. Not that he would even want to see her fucking face ever again. She was dead to him. From his point of view, deservingly so. Anyway, that was her problem, not mine. Wrap it up, Vic. He called me by my nickname. Calling me Vicious in public had become professionally inconvenient in recent years, so now everyone just assumed Vic was short for Victor. I want my apartment back. I want my office back. I want my fucking life back. And I want to live in a place where you don't have to give the taxi driver the exact fucking route like you work for them and not vice versa. Don't worry, I won't outstay my welcome. Newsflash, douchebag, he laughed again. You already have. I could hear the woman beside him yawn loudly. Hey, babe, can we go to sleep? Can you sit on my face while we do? Dean answered. I rolled my eyes. Have a nice day, shitface. Yeah, go eat a rotten ass, but not on my bed, he said, then the line went dead. Just in time, as I had a visitor. Good morning, Mr. Spencer. I brought you your coffee and breakfast. A 3-egg white omelet on a slice of whole wheat toast with a side of freshly cut strawberries. I barely listened to the chirpy voice, but turned around in my chair. And you are? I checked out the woman in front of me. Her hair was so blonde it was almost as white as her big smile. Taller and thinner than the national average. And her suit. St. John, a recent collection. Maybe I wasn't that far off with the outrageous salary I'd offered Help. It was New York, after all. I'm Sue. Dean's PA. She was still bubbly. I've been working for you for almost 2 weeks. Her smile was still creepily intact. Right. On second glance, she did look familiar. Nice to meet you, Sue. You're fucking fired, Sue. Collect your shit and leave, Sue. Sue suddenly looked crestfallen. I was actually relieved for her. Until now, she'd looked like a bad plastic surgeon had sewn that eerie smile on her face. Her cheeks paled under her heavy makeup and her mouth fell open. Sir, you can't fire me. I can't? I arched an eyebrow, feigning interest. I woke up my Dell, fuck MacBook, and fuck all the hipster posers who preferred Macs, Dean included, and double-clicked on the proposal I was working on. I was staging a hostile takeover, a surprise attack on a company that competed with one of our holdings, and fucking Sue was keeping me from finishing the last tweaks. My breakfast plate was still clutched between her French manicured fingers, and I was hoping she could leave it on my desk before she left. I clicked on the side comments I'd made on the Word doc last night after I left Helps to make sure my proposal was airtight. My eyes never left the screen. Give me one reason why not.
Because I've been working for Dean for 2 years now. I was employee of the month back in June. And I have a contract. If I've done something wrong, you're supposed to give me a written warning first. This is wrongful termination of my employment.
Her panicky voice grated on my nerves like a bad high on a weekend. I glanced up at her. If looks could kill, she wouldn't have been a problem anymore. Show me your contract, I snarled. She stomped off in a huff out of the glass box I temporarily called my office. It was usually Dean's, and the fucker liked glass and mirrors, probably because he loved himself too much not to check his reflection every 2 seconds. Sue returned after a few minutes with a copy of her contract. It was still warm, fresh off the printer. God damn it, she wasn't lying. Sue had the right to 30 days notice and all kinds of fancy shit. This was not a standard FHH contract. I drafted the original myself and used every loophole known to man to make sure we had the minimum legal obligations to our employees in case of termination. This PA chick had signed a contract I wasn't familiar with. Was Dean fucking this girl? My eyes skimmed over her whip-thin, malnourished body again. Probably. Ever been to L.A., Sonia?
Sue, she corrected through another unnecessary huff. And once, she added, when I was 4.
How would you like to fly there so you can help Dean while he's working in L.A.? Her face turned from annoyed and sad to confused, then elated. Definitely. Dean was fucking her.
Really? But doesn't Mr. Cole have your PA to assist him?
I shook my head slowly, my eyes still on hers. A huge smile tugged at her lips, and she clapped her hands, barely containing her excitement, thrilled. Such a simple creature our little Sue was, exactly how Dean liked them. He was stupid enough to mistake help for someone like Sue. I knew his ex-girlfriend better than he did.
So I get to keep my job?
Her voice was breathless. It's in the contract. I smacked the papers she'd printed, eager to kill the conversation before she killed my remaining functioning brain cells. Now move it. You have a flight to catch. As soon as she left my office, I picked up my phone and called my PA in Los Angeles. People were disposable. I'd realized it from a very young age. My mother certainly was when my dad replaced her with Josephine. Of course, he'd never acted like a parent, so it was easy to believe that I was disposable too. That's why the idea that no one around me was of much importance was ingrained deep within me. Not my friends, not my colleagues, not my PA. Tiffany? Yeah, collect your stuff and your last paycheck. You're fired. I'm flying someone else out to replace you tonight. I wasn't fucking her. She had a standard contract. Goodbye. I saw her on the security monitor near my laptop the minute she walked through the etched glass doors into the reception area of FHH. My new PA arrived at 8 a.m. sharp, but to say I wasn't impressed was an under-fucking statement. I'd expected her here at least 15 minutes earlier. I'd talked to Sue at 7:30, and I had better shit to do than wait around for help. But I should have known better. This girl had always been a headache. I couldn't ignore her when I saw her at that seedy bar, McCoy's. For one thing, she'd been dressed like she was about to climb over my lap and give me a $20 lap dance. For another, her shoes were too small, and the bra peeking out from her uniform was 2 times bigger than her boobs, meaning she wore shoes that weren't hers and a bra that used to fit before she'd lost so much weight. I couldn't help but feel slightly responsible for her situation. Okay, a lot responsible for her situation. I'd driven her out of Todos Santos. Then again, no one told her to land her fine little ass in the most expensive city in the whole fucking country. What was she doing living in New York anyway? I had no time to ponder this as I pressed the intercom button. Receptionist, I barked. I didn't know her name, and fuck if I cared. Direct Miss LeBlanc to my office and make sure she's got Sylvia's iPad or a notebook.
I'm sorry, sir, but do you mean Sue?
The old woman asked politely. Through the glass wall, I saw her already standing up to shake Help's hand. I meant whoever that chick was who served me breakfast, I growled. I got back to staring at my screen when help knocked on my door. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. After 10 seconds, I leaned back in my seat and knotted my fingers together. Come in. She did. She came in wearing a red and white ladybug dress, a shit you not, and yellow leggings. I also saw that the heel to one of her shoes was glued on crooked. At least they were the right size this time. Her hair was still light purple. Good. I liked it that she no longer reminded me of Joe. And her roots weren't showing anymore. Great. That meant she'd made an effort for me since my visit last night. She tied her hair into a loose French twist. Amelia stared at me defiantly, not even offering a hello. Sit down, I instructed. It was easy to be cold to people. Cold was all I knew. My last real hug was when I was a kid. My mother, shortly before the accident that stole her freedom. My stepmother, Jo, pretended to hug me, once, at a charity event. After my response, she never did it again. Help sat down, and my eyes glided over her legs briefly. She still had a nice body, despite looking like she could use a good meal or three. She had an iPad clasped in her hand. Her eyes were on me. They bled suspicion and disdain. Do you know how to use an iPad? I asked slowly. Do you know how to talk to people without inspiring their gag reflex? She responded, mimicking my tone and cocking her head. I swallowed down a chuckle. I see I got someone's panties in a wad. Very well. Start writing. Book me an appointment with Jasper Stevens. You'll find his number in my email, which you should have access to by now. Then a meeting with Irene Clark. She'll want to meet outside the office. Don't allow for that to happen. I want her here, and I want her to bring the other CEO of her company, Chance Clement. Then send a driver to JFK. My stepmother should land there at 4:30, and book me a taxi to 14 Madison Park for 7 p.m. We're having dinner there. I continued, rattling off orders. I want you to send fresh flowers to Trent's mom. It's her 58th birthday, and make sure there's a personalized card with my name on it. Find her address. She still lives outside San Diego, but I have no fucking clue where. Ask the receptionist what I had for breakfast, and make sure it's on my desk every morning from now on at 8:30 or earlier. And coffee. Make sure there's coffee as well. Make extra copies of every single document in this file. I tossed a thick yellow file her way. She caught it midair, still typing on her iPad without lifting her head. Familiarize yourself with what's inside. The players, their likes and dislikes, their weaknesses. There's an upcoming merger between American Labs Inc. and Martinez Healthcare. I don't want anything to fuck it up, including my new PA. I rubbed my chin, my gaze shamelessly gliding over her body. I think we're done here. Oh, and Amelia? Her eyes flicked up, meeting mine from across the desk. I smirked arrogantly and tilted my head to one side. Doesn't it feel like we've come full circle? The daughter of the help becomes... I dragged my tongue across my lower lip. The help? I didn't know how she'd react, just knew that I wanted to poke her one more time before she left my office. This woman made me feel uncomfortable, exposed. Fuck. I didn't even know why I'd hired her ass. Well, I did. Still, most of the time, she made me feel like I wanted to explode and tear the whole place apart. Help raised her head proudly and got up from her seat, but didn't make a move toward me. She just stared at me like I was a fucking freak. I knew my shirt was stainless and ironed, black, crisp, and sharp, that I looked presentable, handsome, even. Then what the fuck was she staring at? You're still here, I said, moving my eyes to my laptop screen, clicking on my mouse a few times without purpose. She needed to leave. I needed her gone. I was just thinking. She hesitated, staring at the reception area through the open blinds of my glass office walls. My eyes snapped to where her gaze landed. The golden FHH hung inside a bronze circle. There was a hint of a frown on her full pink lips, and despite disliking her, I wouldn't mind having them wrapped around my dick under my desk at some point. FHH? She scrunched her nose in a way that I suspected most men would find adorable. Fiscal Heights Holdings, I replied, curt and formal. Four hot holes, she shot back. You're the four hot holes of Todos Santos. You, Trent, Jamie, and Dean. I have no idea what you're talking about. Just hearing her utter his name aloud made me want to punch the desk. The initials of our enterprise were our little secret, but sometimes, especially when we met once a month for beer and business, we'd talk about how we'd fooled everyone. How people put their hard-earned millions in the hands of a company whose name stood for 4 football idiots, 3 of whose rich daddies paved their way to success. But not help. She knew. Saw past our bullshit. Guess that was what had always drawn me to her. To the girl who lived off cheap carbs and wore 4-year-old shoes but never once fawned over my big mansion and glitzy car. There were several reasons why I hated her. The first and most obvious one was that I suspected she knew what Daryl and I were talking about in my family's library. That she knew my secret. It made me feel pathetic and weak. The second one was that she looked just like a young Joe. Same eyes, same lips, same slightly overlapping front teeth and that Lolita look about her. Hell, even the same southern accent, even though I could hear that she'd lost most of it now after 10 years. Hating her was like atonement to my mother Marie, for a sin that wasn't even mine. The third one, though, was part of the reason why I didn't just hate Help. I respected her, too. Her indifference to my power somewhat disarmed me. Most people felt helpless around me. Amelia LeBlanc never had. I uncuffed the links of my dress shirt and rolled my sleeves up, taking my time and my pleasure in knowing she was watching me. Now get your ass out of my office, Help. I have work to do.
Darling, bless your heart, I swear you look too good.
Joe clutched my cheeks in her cold, leathery hands. Her manicured fingernails dug into my skin a little deeper than they should have, and not by accident. I flashed her a detached smile and allowed her to lower my head so she could kiss my forehead one last time before everything between us went to shit. This was the most physical contact I'd allowed her over the years, and she knew better than to overstep her boundaries. She smelled of chocolate and expensive perfume. The cloying scent felt rotten in my nostrils, even though I knew other people probably found it sweet. Finally, she released me from her grip and inspected my face closely. The bluish tinge under her eyes suggested she was recovering from yet another facial surgery. Joe was what happened to the Bond girl 25 years later. Her resemblance to Brigitte Bardot used to be uncanny. Only unlike Bardot, Joe never agreed to this thing called nature. She fought it, and it fought right back. And this was how she'd ended up having more plastic in her face than a Tupperware container. That was her problem. All the bleached blonde hair, surgeries, makeup, facials, and superficial bullshit in the world, the designer clothes and shoes and Hermes handbags, couldn't cover up the fact that she was getting old. She was getting old while my mother remained young. My mother Marie, only 35 at her death, with hair black as night and skin white as a dove. Her beauty was almost as violent as the accident that eventually ended her life. She looked like Snow White. Only unlike Snow White, she wasn't rescued by the prince. The prince was actually the very man who agreed to poison the apple. The witch in front of me arranged for it to be delivered. Unfortunately, I didn't realize the truth until it was too late.
I adore this restaurant.
She fluffed her overstyled hair and followed the maitre d' to our table, gushing about expensive shit and mistakenly thinking it passed as small talk. I tuned her out. She wore the gray Alexander Wang dress I'd bought for her birthday. It took me forever to find a cheap knockoff that'd make her rich friends laugh at her behind her back, and a perfectly applied lipstick a shade darker than her favorite red wine, just to make sure she'd look prim and proper even after her meal. A part of me was angry at Help for not fucking up any of the tasks I'd given her today. I thought she'd promised to be a shitty PA. If only she'd forgotten to book Joe a driver, I wouldn't be here now. I trudged through the avant-garde design of the exclusive restaurant, moving past walls made of live plants, French doors, backlit black cabinets, and ornate paneling. For a few seconds, I felt like a kid who was about to endure some punishment he dreaded, and on some level, that's exactly who I was. We sat down. We drank our water silently from crystal stemware that was as impractical as it was nonsensical. We flipped through the menu, not looking at each other, murmuring something about the difference between Syrahs and Merlots. But we didn't talk. Not really. I was waiting to see how she was going to broach the subject. Not that it mattered in any way, of course. Her fate was sealed. She'd not murmured a word about the reason she'd flown here, not until after the waitress served us our entrees. Then she finally spoke up.
"Your father's getting worse. He's going to pass soon, I'm afraid."
She stared into her plate, poking at her food like she had no appetite.
"My poor sweet husband."
She pretends to love him. I stabbed my steak with my fork, cutting into the blood-rare filet, chewing the juicy piece of meat, my face blank. But my hate for him is genuine and real. That's a shame, I said, my voice devoid of emotion. Her gaze met mine. She shivered inside her fake designer number.
I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be able to hold on.
She arranged the silverware over the napkin she hadn't placed in her lap, straightening them in a neat line. Why don't you just go ahead and spit it out, Joe? I smiled politely, draining my glass of scotch, fuck wine, and sat back, making myself comfortable. This was going to be good. Squeal, mother, squeal. She took a tissue from her purse, patting the mist of sweat from her waxy, Botoxed forehead. It wasn't warm in the restaurant. She was anxious. It felt good.
Baron.
She sighed and my eyes clenched shut, my nostrils flaring. I hated that name. It was my father's. I would have legally changed it long ago if it weren't for the fact I didn't want anyone to know I gave a shit.
You don't need all of his money, Joe said with another sigh. You've built a multi-million-dollar company on your own. And of course, I have no expectations about how much I might inherit. I just need a place to stay. This whole thing has caught me so unprepared.
I was only 10 when Dean's father, Eli Cole, a family law attorney who represented some of the biggest actors in Hollywood, shut Dad's office door for a 2-hour consultation on estate planning. Despite being crazy for Joe, or maybe because he was crazy for her and never really trusted himself, Dad insisted on a prenup that protected every penny and gave Joe nothing if she ever filed for divorce. Death wasn't a divorce, but she was worried about the will. Neither Joe nor I knew what his will said, but we could guess. My father was a vain old man whose wife was his once mistress, a second violin to his business empire. And me? To my father, I barely existed, except as a name that symbolized his legacy. But unlike her, I could help that legacy live on. In all likelihood, I was going to be in charge of his entire business empire soon. I would hold the purse strings, and Joe was worried that my main vice, vindictiveness, would mean she was going to lose her cushy lifestyle. For once in her miserable life, she was right. I exhaled, lifting my brows and looking sideways like she'd caught me off guard. Not uttering a word, it was too much fun to watch her hopeful gaze as it met my armor of indifference, I took another slow sip of my scotch.
If we find out that he...
She trailed off. Left you penniless? I finished for her.
Give me the mansion.
Her tone was clipped, and surprise, surprise, she was no longer pretending to be warm and motherly.
I won't ask for anything else.
The way she looked at me, like a brat who'd been denied their favorite toy, like she was in a position to negotiate, almost made me laugh. Sorry, Joe. I have plans for that mansion.
Plans?
She seethed, her bleached teeth shining with saliva.
It's my home. You haven't lived in Todos Santos for 10 years.
I don't want to live there, I said simply, tugging at my tie. I want to burn it to the ground. Her blue eyes flared and her mouth collapsed into a frown.
So if it comes to that, you won't give me even one thing, huh? Not even the mansion.
Not even the fruit bowl on the kitchen counter. Sans fruit, I confirmed, nodding. We should do this more often, Joe. Spend time together, dine, share a nice wine. I had a lot of fun tonight. The waitress placed the bill on our table, the timing perfect, just like I'd arranged. I smiled, and this time, this one miserable fucking time, my smile actually reached my eyes. I yanked my wallet out of the breast pocket of my blazer and handed over an American Express black card. The waitress took it immediately and vanished behind a black door at the end of the busy room.
Remember, Baron, we don't know what the will says.
Joe shook her head slowly, her eyes hard.
There will be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others.
She was quoting the Bible now. Nice touch. I distinctly remembered thou shalt not kill somewhere in there, too. I smell a challenge. You know I'm always a little silly for a challenge, Joe. I winked and thumbed my collar, widening it. I'd been in this suit for far too long. I wanted to shed it along with this shitty day. My expression remained amused.
Tell me, Baron, do I need to seek legal representation for this?
She leaned forward, her elbows on the table. Elbows on the fucking table? Josephine would have smacked me good if it were me with my elbows anywhere near the table when I was a kid. Her brother would have finished the job with his belt in the library, too. I cracked my neck and squeezed my lips together, pretending to think about it. I definitely had legal representation of my own. It was the nastiest motherfucker to ever study law, and it was me. I might be cold, heartless, and emotionally handicapped, but Joe knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was also the best in the business. I'd spoken to Eli Cole, too. He'd agreed to represent me in case my father did leave or something and I needed to scare her off. I wanted her penniless. It wasn't about the money. It was about justice. The waitress reappeared with my credit card. I tipped her 100% and got up, leaving my stepmother alone at the table in front of her half-eaten dish. My plate was clean. My conscience was, too. "By all means, please, feel free to lawyer up, mother," I said as I shouldered into my cashmere pea coat. "Frankly, that's the best idea you've had in years."
Chapter 6 Emilia. 10 years ago. "Sure you don't want to go back to the party?" I asked Dean between breathless kisses. He nuzzled his nose into my collarbone, our lips swollen from the last half hour. We'd kissed until we'd run out of saliva and our mouths were numb. I liked his kisses. They were good. Wet. Maybe a little too wet, but definitely enjoyable. Besides, we were still figuring out how to enjoy each other. Things were going to get even better with time. I was sure of it.
"Party? There's a party?"
Dean rubbed the back of his neck, pinching his eyebrows together.
"Cut that shit, Millie. I didn't even notice. Way too busy spending time with a girl who tastes like ice cream and paints like Picasso."
His voice was husky and hoarse. I ignored the Picasso remark because my style was nothing like his, but I appreciated the compliment, I guess. Okay, it annoyed me a little, because I knew for a fact Dean didn't even know one Picasso painting. God, what was wrong with me? I liked Dean a lot. He was handsome, with his chestnut man bun and green eyes. I ran my hand over his bulging triceps, groaning with need when I thought about what they could do to me if and when we decided to take our makeout sessions to the next step. I knew all about the four hot holes.